Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Cube and Chaos podcast. I'm Finite MTG, aka Max.
Yeah, and I'm Jakob, aka Crackshot. It's been a while, but we have another amazing guest with us.
Amazing guest, even.
Yeah, I should introduce him with his stream tags, I think, because Amaz is cool, Amaz is awesome, and Amaz is the best.
Oh, man.
Yeah, really one of the most entertaining streamers on Twitch. I think that's a big part of your brand. So maybe you want to say hello.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I'm Amaz, aka Amaz. I mean, people call me Amaz now, even like my real life friends, which is pretty funny. I'm glad to be on this podcast, and I love talking about magic, so I'm ready for today.
Sweet, we're very happy to have you, and yeah, really excited to dive in. Jakob mentioned like you are a pretty well-known and just very successful entertainer on Twitch, but yeah, it'll be nice to get to know a little bit more about you as like a player too as we go through your signature spellbook. What do you want to start off with over there?
First of all, I just gotta say that like I did so much Hearthstone and like even like Dota Auto Chess and other games back then, and it's actually, I'm so happy that I can actually talk to magic people. Because whenever I meet anybody, like anywhere, they'll always be like, "Man, I used to watch your Hearthstone a lot. Like, how's it going then?" But then it's like, I've kind of done with that, you know, kind of moved on. So I'm just super happy to talk about Magic. Recently, so I host a Monday Magic night draft nights with you know, some of my buddies in real life, and they come to my house.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm so happy because like I love playing Magic in real life more than like online and stuff. Like that online's obviously great and all, but you know, having a regular group is always good. It was insane because the last weekend, so we're like a group of 12 or whatever, right? 12 to 14 or something like that. Last week, seven of us went to an RCQ for the Wilds of Eldraine format, and four of us top eighted.
That's awesome.
That was kind of insane. And it was a two slaughter. So then me and Brian, another guy, we ended up winning. So that was great, and oh my god, and after that Brian was like, oh, we're definitely the villains, right? And then because we also won the last two slaughter, so we're just kind of like kind of crushing it. Basically all I'm gonna say is like I just like limited a lot. I like it competitively, I like it for, and I'm going to Vegas next week, I guess, for the 100k open, which I'm very glad they're making big limited tournament back, because usually it's just constructed, right? And I only play constructed if it's like needed of me, if I like qualify for something.
Yeah,
so I'm very excited about that.
If they force you to play it on the pro tour, you
I guess I'll have to learn the format, you know. God.
That's sick. Congrats. Multiple RCQ wins. I guess that does probably make you the villain, sadly. So
yeah, a little bit. I remember hearing that there's somebody was like, oh, maybe I want to play the Wilds of Eldraine RCQ. And then they were like, no, Amaz and this group of guys are going to be there. So there's no point. And I was like, well, did they say it to me that I heard it from someone else saying that? I was like, wow. Yeah, that's very kind of them to put us in such a, you know, high level, I guess.
Yeah, but hosting a group of 8+ people at your house every week also makes you the hero, so I guess it balances out.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
I guess I'm okay with starting the spellbook, and then we can talk about some cubes. Yeah,
yeah, the spellbook really is a good way to get to know you a bit, I think. So
Okay, so I guess do you want me to just wing it, or do you guys want to introduce it, or how does it?
You just start with whichever card you want to start, and then we'll see if we also have to say something about it.
Okay,
or
cool. Okay, yeah. Okay. So let's start with Kithion. My first card is Kithion, Hero of Akros. It's the 1-mana 2/1 white flip planeswalker, right? So this is the first card I ever opened in Magic, and I remember it was a pre-release, and everybody's opening all these cool, you know, big mana creatures or like board wipes and everything. And then I got a 1-mana 2/1 and I was pissed. Dude, I was like, what the heck is this? Like, this is not cool at all, right? But then it was kind of cool because, like, you know, he played really well. I ended up, you know, my friends like told me to, yeah, you should play him. He's really good. I was like, I don't care, whatever. And then he ended up just being very, very solid. So that kind of start, plus my Hearthstone background, kind of made me start as more like an aggro or like, you know, more like a tempo-based player. So that's kind of my beginning there.
Gotcha. Yeah. Have you played much of that card since you first opened it? Or
yeah, so I always wanted to put it in my cubes, but I always took it out because it's very awkward if you have to flip it to the other side. I don't even like really remember what the other side does, like the loyalty numbers. I don't even remember quite as well. I think it's a +2, +1, and 0 or something like that. But I think flip cards are generally pretty bad when you have like real life cubes because you don't want people to like turn it around and stuff like that, right? And yeah, and even then, I think I played this in Pioneer when I was playing the red white, what is it, the Convoke deck, the, you know, just put everything out with the 8 Convokers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, generally speaking, no, I think this card is, it's good. I have good memories of it, but.
Yeah, makes sense.
I guess I'll just keep on going then. Yeah. You guys can just stop me whenever you want. All right. Okay, so next card is Thermal Alchemist. I freaking love this card. This card was first originally printed in the, what is it? I think it's Eldritch Moon. And there were only 2 packs of this or something. And then I was like, I just want to get every single one. Because like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's just so threatening, right? It's a good blocker. It's a good blocker for 2/2s. Back then, there's a lot of 2/2s. It doesn't really track up like these days. It needs to be like a 0/4. Like the Catapult and Wilds of Interest is the same thing, right? Yeah. But yeah, it was a good blocker. It can win the game by itself. And it doesn't need to get into creature combat to do it, which is kind of like rare. Usually, you got to hit your opponent's face to win. So you have to either do like flyers or like, you know, you have to remove your opponent's creatures and whatnot. But this just sits there and asks your opponent that, like, can you deal with this? And if you don't have like the turn to do it, you're just going to lose, right? So it just messes them up a lot.
Yeah, playing the aggression and the defense at the same time is like really cool.
It was
very, very strong. Like originally being a common.
Oh, yeah, it was a common. That's right. Yeah, it was busted.
It's such a strong card. I'm pretty sure it's a callback to like Lobber Crew or whatever from Ravnica. But the funny thing about Thermo Alchemist is like they made a bunch of kind of different versions of this thing like since the first printing in Eldritch Moon. And they were all like significantly worse. They were like, we're not doing that again. Like that thing was like way too high on rate. And yeah, I mean, it's a sweet card. It makes sense as an upshift to uncommon. And yeah, I think a lot of players think of it fondly.
Yeah. I think there was some, like, Ikoria has one, but you had to pay mana for it. And then there was...
That was really bad.
Yeah. And then there's a Ravnica Allegiance one that, like, pinged both players or something.
Oh, God, yeah, the Spewer. Yeah.
After Thermal Alchemist, they kind of, like, were like, oh, I guess we had to take a step back from this effect because it was just so... Especially if you're multiples, right?
For sure.
That becomes insane.
Yeah.
Also, like, speaking of pre-releases, I played one pre-release later. I don't remember. The one where the Void was in.
Yeah. That's the, what's it? It's Battle for Xanagar, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think Nettle Drone or something.
The 3-1?
Yeah, the 3-1 that does the same thing when you play something colorless.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
And
that's
I played Two-Headed Giant in there. And this card was so insane. And I now noticed that the Thermal Alchemist also deals it to each opponent. So... Like a Twitter giant that's like even more broken, but that's a very
iconic case. Yeah, for sure. mm-hmm. All right, I guess I'll move on to the third card. So the third card is a Clutch of Currents. It's the awaken card from Battle for Zendikar. Yeah, one mana. You can awaken it for 5, and then you can turn a land. You can basically turn a land to creature of 3 counters, right? Oh man, I looked at this card and I was like blown out. So keep in mind, this is my second set, right? My first set is Origins with the Kithion.
Yeah.
And then this is my second set, so I'm still kind of fresh. I'm like, wow, this card is insane in the amount of modes you can cast this cards with. Because like I just have to quote Hearthstone because that's how I got introduced to card games, right? Like each card does a thing. That's pretty much it. But Clutch of Currents has like 3 modes, which is like wild to me when I first understood that. Because like you can do 1 mana bounce, right? You can do 5 mana. Make a 3/3 tapped and bounce the creature, or you can boost a 6 mana, make a 3/3 haste and attack with it, right? Like that actually like blew my mind off. I was like, wow, like it's such a simple card, but you can like do it in so many different ways.
Yeah, I don't know enough about Hearthstone to really say, but I definitely think that's one of the awesome things about Magic, just like the way they're able to kind of shoehorn that, like, well, not even shoehorn, but just really like smoothly slip in like that kind of versatility and like modality without kind of like writing on the card, like there are 3 options here, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like Kicker is kind of like an in-your-face way to do it. So I kind of like the cards that secretly kind of, you know, you have to figure out the little pieces of puzzle to like kind of maximize the potential of the card.
Yeah. All right. It is a sweet card too. I like Awaken.
Okay, next one, we have Seasoned Pyromancer. It's the, what's it called, the MH1 one? 3 mana, 2/2. You could discard 2 cards, then draw 2 cards, which is, doesn't matter if you discard any cards, you just always draw 2 cards. And then for each non-land, you make a 1/1, and then you can, when it's a graveyard, you can pay 5 mana to make 2 1/1s as well. Man, this card is just, like, bonkers. Once again, it's like, it calls back to the modality of it, right? You can, like, you know, cast it with your empty hand to draw 2 cards, you can cast it to make 1/1s. You know, you can cast it to filter lands and stuff like that. And it has something else in the graveyard, which is very tricky. So then, I don't know. Like, I just remember, like, jamming this card every time I see it. And it's in my stronger cube, I guess, in my mind map cube. I just freaking love this guy. This guy is just, like, insane. And it doesn't run over the game, right? I don't really like rares and mythics that, you know, you play it and then you just win the game. Like, Breach the Multiverse or something, right? Like, that's not, like, not really fun. It's powerful, but it's not really, like, a fun card. But this is, I think it's a very balanced card.
For sure. This is one of those nice effects, I think, that, like, fits well, not only just, like, as a powerful card for, you know, even cubes like Vintage Cube or whatever. I don't know if it showed up in Constructed, but even, like, all the way down to, like, MH1 Limited, just, like, put it in your red-green lands and graveyard deck, put it in your blue-red, like, draw 2 cards per turn deck, and, like, you know, it still fits the theme, and it doesn't take over the game.
So. Yeah.
I just really like this. Discard, but if you don't have it, then you still draw, like, this wording. And they just did it again in the new set with the Charming Scoundrel.
Yes,
2-mana 1/1.
Yeah.
And I think it's really cool for red, like, in some ways to get an Ambush Visionary with some other text also, but I like this type of wording.
Okay, so the next card is Sphinx's Tutelage. Oh, baby. So this is actually my favorite card of all time. It's the 3-mana enchantment that whenever you draw a card, they mill 2. And if they're same color, they do it again. So they can, like, do it again, right? Like, do it forever. And then you can also pay 6 mana to loot. Yeah, when I first saw this card, I was like, well, why? What is the point of that, you know? Like, and then I was like, oh, it's just middle your opponent. They're going to take some damage when they mill out. But then it's not like that, because in Hearthstone, when you mill, you don't die immediately. So I didn't know that when they mill, if no cards, they lose the game. So I was like, wait, this is actually insane. Because, you know, you play this, you put a turn timer on your opponent, and you can just, if they just don't deal with it, you win the game, which is insane. So you can, like, draft around this by getting a lot of removal, a lot of counter spells, you know? So that's kind of how you can, like, take advantage of this card. You can just, like, completely attack your opponent in a different axis, right? I think one of my favorite Magic Origins decks were just like removal, two tutelages, and then counter spells, and that's it. I didn't play any creatures, so then they just die because, like, all their creature removal is stuck in their hand. They can't do anything, so they have a lot of deck cards, and they usually don't have enough of a clock to kind of, like, you know, beat through it. So I love cheeky cards like this where you can, like, build a completely different deck that's not like a normal limited deck with, like, creatures and spells and removal and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a really mean card, like, very hard to interact with, like, really punishing, like, decks that want to be a bit slower but that are not prepared to fight on this axis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are some enchantments like this that just mills your opponent, like, every upkeep or something like that, but this also turns your draw twos into damage to the face, right? So, like, that this effect is, like, so powerful. I think it's, like, the best version of it. And then they made some, like, bad ones, that, like, the worst ones, like, Teferi's Tutelage or something like that. That's, like, not this power level.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point too, right? Where when I play limited, I always see the game as in, like, how many turns do I have left and how many turns do I have to kill my opponents with, right? So, like, a two mana 2/2 is 10 turns. And then a 2-mana 3/1 is 7 turns, right? So I really like the 2-mana 3/1 stat line, like, way more.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit more risky too, but...
Oh, 3-1s are just better than 2/2s. Like, oh my god, they can trade for 3/3s, they kill your opponent 7 times. I just like, you know, big power more, I guess, in general.
Yeah,
Maybe it's me, like, thinking, yeah, but what if they have a pinger, but they don't really print them like that anymore, so...
Yeah, you can play around that. You can just, you know, maneuver around that, it's fine. And then the next card is Oversold Cemetery. Well, it's from a lot
That's
of sets, but it's
old
the
old card. Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah, it's an old card. It just got reprinted.
It did.
I only really know new cards, but, you know, playing with this card in Eldraine was so much fun, right? Oh my god. I would first pick this all the time. I think this card is broken. It's a build around, right? Obviously.
Yeah.
But you just need some like ginger brutes and some sacrifice stuff, and then you can just loop an infinite loop and your opponents can't win.
Yeah, it's this card was like a menace when I was still going to school at Kitchen Table Magic. This card was like nigh unbeatable. Like, yeah. You couldn't deal with enchantments and boards would clutter and this would just then end the game. It was kind of insane. But I really like it in Modern Limited as well, it being such a build around with a very unique effect. It's cool. Mm-hmm.
I guess if you're playing this in Chaos or whatever, it gets even more insane, right? You can do like cycling creatures or like, you know, you can do mill. There's not a lot of mill in Eldraine, I guess. But like there's so many ways to build around this. Okay, so I listen to a lot of limited podcasts as well. Especially before a set releases. And the main reason to do that is to see what cards they underrate. You know, like what cards they rate Fs. And so and then I'd be like, wait, I actually kind of like that card. So then,
and then you know you will get it.
Yeah, exactly. So then sometimes when I open this, I'm like, oh, whatever. I'll just pick the removal. This is going to wheel. And it does. And I'm like so proud of myself.
Yeah, it's kind of insane how far the word from like some of the bigger podcasts travels. Like if there's something, many people take it as gospel. And like most of the time they are correct. But if you are feeling differently, it's interesting to know about what they have. Yeah.
Basically, I love podcast Fs. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
All right. Next one is Risen Reef. Also kind of like a build around. It's just a very, very good card. It's the 3-mana 1/1 that, you know, you get to Coiling Oracle every time you play, every time you get another elemental on the battlefield and itself, right? So like, I don't know. This card is just value. I drafted this so much and in the set that was in, what's core 20. And then when I had two of these, I was just so happy. I knew I can't lose. Yeah, I guess ETB creatures are just so strong these days compared to like creatures that don't do anything, right? When they enter the battlefield, because it doesn't matter if you kill them, obviously. Like that's like, you know, that's like the level one thing. Yeah, this kind of like ask your opponent to kind of deal with it. This card also reminds me of like a limited idea that whenever your opponent plays a card that's kind of suspicious or kind of doesn't really do anything, I always kind of perk up and be like, man, you're playing this bad card in your deck, which means that you probably have some sort of combos with it. So, you know, my brain is turning, dials are turning. I'm really like, okay, you might have this card to combo with this card, or your win condition is this instead of that, that kind of thing. So Risen Reef is kind of like that to me. It's like, if your opponent plays a Risen Reef, are you going to use a deal 3 damage to kill it? Because it already did its thing, and maybe they have no more elementals, right? So it's kind of a interesting push and pull kind of thing here.
It puts you in a real squeeze. Card is very good. It's just sometimes a little bit sad when I see it, that building it into a cube is not so easy. There's not much in the way of elementals outside of M20. And
yeah, that's true. Channel, but I think, you know, you can play it with, like, changelings, I guess. The call time changelings were all green and blue, so that's kind of not bad.
Yeah,
I think I actually have that in my the mind map cube,
in like the mind map cube, or
with all the changelings, and gotcha. There's like a changeling tribal or something like that, you know. But then really quickly for the last card, it's Rakdos the Showstopper. Oh baby, it's the 6-mana 6/6 flample demon from Guilds of Ravnica that, like, you know, you get to flip a coin for each creature that's not a demon, devil, or imp, and then you kill each one that it's like the wrong side or something like that. Yeah, so I don't know. If I were to be like a magic card, I feel like I'd be Rakdos. You know, I like fun. I feel like my personality is kind of black-red, you know? And, you know, I like attacking my opponents with 6/6 flying trample creatures. My favorite creature type in magic is demon. So this is basically just kind of like me, I guess, in a sense.
Well, yeah, and also the flavor text.
A little bit, yeah.
It also fits you well.
Oh, man. So there you go. That's my spell. And, man, that's such a good idea to have guests on your podcast come up with, like, 8 cards. Yeah, just genius idea.
Well, thanks. And, yeah, really glad. It sounds like you enjoyed the exercise. I'm really surprised, like, more than anything, you know, you mentioned stuff about, like, not having played for super long or, like, not being familiar with old cards. Just like based on the number of chaos drafts and stuff like that that you've done, like in and out of our server, like, you know, you could have fooled me. I really thought that you were familiar with, like,
when we do the chaos drafts, and then we're doing on this on a separate website, right? They don't have the Oracle text, and then I'm like, what is happening here? What is this word? What is this wording? And stuff like that. It does help that I'm a level 1 judge. So, you know, I kind of like, before the level one judge thing, I already kind of like knew the rules a lot. Basically how cards work together, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if we're going to tie this for a story, but I'll make it short. But basically, when I first got into Magic, there was a Texas GP for Magic Origins. And I got too scared to play it because I thought that I didn't know the clear hand of rules. And then, you know, if someone says something and I don't think it's right, and I'll be too scared to like, you know, basically
challenge them
or anything, or like call a judge or anything. So I was basically studying every single piece of rules and knowing how it works. Magic Online works a lot before I joined the next GP, which is Battle for Zendikar. So Battle for Zendikar is my first one. But then I was very stressed for the first GP because, like, you know, it's like the first time actually playing, like, how do you say, like competitive Magic, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's a really overwhelming, like, rule set. I don't know. I think it's really easy to get sucked into, like, a rabbit hole of, like, the comprehensive rules or whatever, especially when, like, you're starting out and, like, everything's new.
Yeah.
But
it's interesting. Yeah. When we do our Chaos Drafts, dude, some of these old cards are just so bad. Like,
what's happening
here? Like, change the word of a spell to like another land type or something, like what is happening?
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what they were thinking when they came up with some of the like really horrible unplayables back in the day, but
but they're very fun to read, I guess.
Yeah, entertaining for sure.
There was the full chaos on Magic Online, which was amazing. I didn't have enough time to play, so. But Max played a lot, and there's still a lot of YouTube content coming out. And Amas, did you play a lot?
I played a lot. It was just so much fun. I still wish that they did like pure chaos with like all the sets, right? Because it was like still curated. What's the finite?
Yeah, it was like 66 sets or something like that, which like the ones that we run in the Discord, I mean, we don't even have all the sets on Magic Online, but it's close. Right. And we're up to like roughly 120. So
yeah. So I mean, there's none of those bad packs, I guess, right? Which is, I think it's fine, I guess. So the games are a little bit better, and you have more choices. But the fact that of the matter is, like in chaos, so many cards are so bad, right? Because like they only are good in that specific set because of the mechanics or whatever.
Yeah.
So I just like weird random cards in chaos, so I would like a full set of chaos instead. But I did play that a lot. This is still really fun.
Yeah, it was sweet.
And we were so starved for it also.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Like it doesn't count to Magic Online very often, so it's a real treat when it does. Happy it did.
Yeah, I was really glad that the Magic Online team decided to bring that back. It was a pleasant surprise because I remember I'm pretty sure that week had been like empty on the calendar, and then all of a sudden they had like mentioned that it was chaos, and then I was really excited and I asked like Tony Mayer, I think the guy who, I think he was DEC Squid or something. I'm probably getting the username wrong, but basically he's been on the Magic Online team for a really long time and I think is like a beloved kind of community figure there. Anyway, I ended up asking him like what kind of chaos was coming to Magic Online, and he said like this is the closest thing they do to like quote unquote like total or like pure chaos. So I was really excited and wound up with a bunch of time to just grind it. Streamed all my matches. Was lucky to have Amaz in chat for some of it.
Yeah.
Got to slow him down in the trophy race a little bit when he was maybe watching me or helping me. Man. So that was.
Yeah, I actually had so many errands to run during that week. So I didn't get to play as much as I wanted, but it's still very fun. Yeah.
In terms of win rate or just like stringing trophies together and that kind of thing. Like, I don't know if you like track win rate or that kind of thing, but at least from the outside, it seemed like you were winning a lot.
Oh, yeah. I was winning like way more than any other format, right? Because like, I don't know, we do this every now and then. And also I don't know, when I'm in my free time, you know what? I'll take some time to build my cube. Dude, I literally scryfall every single random card just to like see what I can put in it. So like, I don't know. I feel like when it's a chaos pack, you can just tell me the names of the cards. I can probably tell you what it does. Like a super old set, like I just because I just look at so many random cards that I just kind of know, so I definitely feel like I have a leg up in that format, like up compared to like someone who just plays normal sets or something.
Yeah, very interesting, because like often people who do not like it say it's so random, like you just have to open the bombs.
Finite actually talked to me about this. They were like, oh, a lot of people are off it because, you know, it's kind of random. You can't draft a cohesive deck. And then people are saying that, like, you can just lose to, like, Mega Bomb. And a Mega Bomb is, like, a common from, like, 20 years ago. Right? What's it called? The Troubled Healer or something? Like, that card is insane, right? Oh, my goodness. Like, Ultimate Bomb. But then I think one strategy that people don't really get for Chaos is that you really want to have different effects, like, different card effects in your deck, right? So, like, you know, Modern Magic is like, oh, if you're drafting aggro, you want as many 2-mana 3-1s or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. And then if you're like fairies, you want as many fairies. Or I feel like in Chaos, if you don't have a disenchant and somewhere in your draft, somewhere in your 45 or something like that, you kind of messed up. Your opponent can just play like a broken enchantment and you can't win, right?
Yeah.
And like, is that going to happen a lot? I think that's going to happen a lot because like packs are from everywhere, right? So I feel like that you need like, you know, enchantment removal, you know, some discard sometimes. You need, like, at least, like, one or two counters. You basically need a plan for everything while still having your own game plan. So I think people miss out on that quite a bit.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're not just talking about, like, kind of main deckable interaction, like creature removal and that kind of thing. But, yeah, going beyond that to, like, discard spells, naturalizes, maybe counter spells in the, you know, right matchup or whatever.
Yeah, pretty much. Because we draft a lot of different formats in my Monday draft night group.
Mm-hmm.
And I told people, dude, the people that whenever we do Chaos, which is like, I don't know, every 2 months or something like that, or every month, actually, whenever we get bored of the main set, which is kind of like do Chaos. I told people that, like, dude, you need to have some way to do a Vloxodon Warhammer when it comes down, right? Because it's like freaking uncommon. Yeah. It's in every of those weird master sets and those mystery booster sets and stuff like that. You can't just scoop to that card, right? So either you have like a good plan against that, or you have an answer for that. That's just required.
So how do you do the Chaos when you do it in real life? Do you like construct packs before, or do you buy random packs from sets, or do you have like a huge storage?
A pretty big inventory of packs, actually. So we just pull out, like, you know, 30 random packs or 20 random packs or whatever. Sometimes we decide it's like, oh, it's Masters Chaos, so we, like, Masters packs are included as well. But yeah, I have a lot. And then for my draft group, well, it's good because it's geared towards more the competitor side, right? So we do like 3 rounds of Swiss, and then if you are 2-0 or better, or sorry, 2-1 or better, so 2-1 or 3-0, you play 1 round of finals. And then if you win the finals, you win the day. So there could be multiple winners, depending on like how many people draft. And then the winners get to split the rares and the foils so that you don't money draft and then just leave, right? So yeah, we've been doing that for, oh my God. So I've been hosting this draft night for 3 years. And before that, there was a person in Texas called Jeff Sandy, one of my favorite people in the world. He actually hosted draft nights before I did. I kind of took over when, you know, he passed away to a heart attack. But He did that for 20 years. So this is kind of like a 20-year tradition thing. So obviously we don't have the same people as before, but this has been this Texas draft group has been going on for like a long time.
Awesome. Yeah. That's really nice.
But going back, we have a lot of packs. And then after the draft, the winners just get to split. And then, you know, you play to win. You know, you don't play for like the money cards or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's really sweet.
I'm just starting out with my paper playing group, like not been living in the place where I'm in right now for a long time, but we're now playing also every week, every Wednesday in Braunschweig, Germany. So yeah, we're still building up the people. So we are between, I would say most of the time we're around 4 people, but up to 10, I guess, something like that.
Yeah, you gotta get more people to get drafts fired up. It's important.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes, it's growing slowly. We are going for 3-4 months now, and yeah, I hope it will be the bigger group and slowly more often 8 people.
You guys are both ahead of me. I need to start building up my paper scene. I'm still trying to find like an LGS that maybe would be interested in like doing some cube drafts or something like that, but it's like kind of low on my priority list right now because of like grad school and that kind of thing. But it's still something I'm interested in and I'd love to do. One question I had too is how this past Chaos format went, like for you specifically, Amaz. What people have said about, oh, you know, like it's so random, it's high variance, like that kind of thing. It's interesting because like thinking about you or like the Smasher, someone else on the trophy leaderboard, doesn't seem you guys really experienced a lot of variance, right? You know, if you did, somehow there was still a lot of winning for you guys despite that. Do you have any idea like why maybe there seems to be less variance than people expect?
First of all, I think the delta between the best player and the worst player in Chaos is way bigger than like a normal set, right? you're expected to know so many more cards,
mm-hmm.
like let alone the interactions between cards. So I think the good players are just gonna like actually just steamroll. Like I play so many games where, you know, they just play creatures and like normal vanilla creatures or whatever, right? And then I didn't have vanilla creatures. I had good cards. So it was just very easy. So I think that's like the main thing, is that the player skill gap is too high for that, because it's such a rare format to draft and not a lot of people can like get used to it or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I guess like one other thing I was wondering, just because at this point, it feels like it's been so long since there was Chaos on Magic Online that I wasn't hosting. I'm wondering, like, did you notice like much of an effect drafting like in pod versus out of pod? Because at least to me, it felt like there were at least potentially some really strong effects of like not playing against people from your pod.
Yeah, like obviously that's like a modern online gaming thing where League is just better for most people to enjoy Magic. Right, you can just start a game anytime. There's no best of three, even in Magic Arena, because that takes too much time and thinking or whatever. So it's just kind of an evolution that, you know, they kind of have to do with like the digital gaming, I guess. Yeah, so obviously it's a big deal, because when I draft a Magic Arena, best of one, it's ranked, and best of three isn't ranked, so there's no point in doing best of three. And I go like, this is a cool sideboard card, Soul Guide Lantern, right, in the new set or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's definitely cooler to be like, oh, I'll draft this in case there's a Reanimator deck, which is the Lich Knight's Conquest card or whatever. Like, you can draft that to hedge against that, or like back for seconds or whatever. But in best of one, you're like, that's never going to happen. So you just pass it along, right? So it's just a different game, where in best of one, there are some cards that are just blank pieces of cardboard. And in best of three, then there's so much more that you need to keep track of. And then in pod, especially if you go like, well, I guess I passed this broken black card, you can still draft black, right? Whereas like, I think in best of one, you're more incentivized to just stay in your lane and not hedge, in my opinion, because like everybody's decks would just be stronger in general. But like in pod draft, I feel like that there's a lot of times where I pass a good black card, but I'm in black afterwards. I feel like there's like a lot of value to passing good cards in drafting in general, right? So that you kind of know that your next two players are going to be that color, so that, you know, you can kind of like maneuver the draft in a way such that you get the best deck, right? But
sure.
Yeah, definitely more pronounced in pod drafting, which is like more of a thing in pod drafting.
Yeah, for sure. So it sounds like you're saying like, if you're passing like a broken black card in a pod draft and then ending up in black anyway, like maybe part of the decision there is to try to weaken the deck of the person you passed the broken black card to. Is that correct? Or?
Yes. I mean, that does play a factor. But I think the main factor is that if you pass a broken rare in best of one, or like in non-pod draft or whatever you want to call it, right? You know that guy's going to do that, I think, in a sense, right? Like if you pass Decadent Dragon or something like that, you know they're going to be red, mm-hmm. I guess, in a sense. Or they're going to try and play that. So there is value to that, right? Especially when you open like multiple red rares that are good with the Enchanting Tales or whatever. I'm talking about this Eldraine because that's the most recent thing I did. I think you're more incentivized to pick the lone card that's good in best of one versus when you're pod drafting, I would pick the Decadent Dragon for power level. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So basically, not exactly like leaning toward hate drafting, but just toward like taking the best card in the pack, trying to make sure other people don't end up with super juiced decks.
Well, I don't really care if my opponent's super juiced. I remember in the what's it called? In a GP for, oh my god, the set with the Avacyn, the flip Avacyn. Shadows over Innistrad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was that format and went to day 2 draft, right? Dude, that guy opened Avacyn that I'm passing to. You had to show people, right? Back then you had to show people that around the table. It's like, oh, I opened this card or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I opened Always Watching, the enchantment, right? So I passed it to him because I knew it was gonna be white. Right? Yeah. I think that's completely fine. I don't know. I think that strat is okay. Because like you don't want to contest with people. It's okay if you had a broken deck, you know? So I ended up in a very good black-green deck with Gtrok Monster. And I beat that guy, you know? I did proceed to lose my last two matches, sadly, to like even more broken decks. But I'm just saying, like, it's okay for my pod guys to be strong. It's just that I want my neighbors to have a clear lane that they want to stay in, so that I can not do that and I can get the better cards when they open like an off-color rare or something like that. So I actually want to be friends with my neighbor.
Yeah. So I guess it's sounding more like you're hoping maybe if you do your neighbors a favor, like they'll kind of return it or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, I think that's the kind of like a good way to draft.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Especially if it's not in port, but I guess also in port because the people on the opposite side of the table are still kind of so far away that you won't influence them much and they won't influence you much.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. It's not like that. It's not about, I don't think it's about diluting other people's decks. It's about like maximizing your deck. And the way to do it is that if you know what your neighbors are drafting, then you don't have to draft their colors. So they will pass you the good cards in your colors.
Yep.
Yeah. I guess, do you want to move on to talking about cube?
Yeah. So I thought a bit about what topic we could bring for talking about cube. And something I've been thinking about recently is how to present my cube, like to other people in my play group. I'm just building the cube that I have online on MTGO for a while and that we've played in the community. Now building in paper, the last cards should arrive in the next days. And I was just thinking about how I present it to the people in my play group that they are excited to play it. There's other cubes available there as well. And just to quickly tell them what it will be about. And I know you also have two cubes, Amaz. One of them has been on MTGO, not like mine in my collection, but for everybody to draft, like proper.
Yeah.
So maybe you want to talk about your cubes and maybe, yeah, also present them to us and what are the main ideas there.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, so our first one is the Peasant Cube that most people know. It was on Magic Online because I went to, once again, I went to a GP and I bought the cube this time. And I actually played with some WotC people and they were like, wow, this is a very good cube. You want to like put on Magic Online sometimes? And that's kind of how that started. And
that's awesome.
Well, the idea, yeah, that was really cool. We just played in the hotel and then we were just like sleeving cards. And it was just like building decks or whatever. It was really, really, really fun. So the idea behind the Peasant Cube is that it was like, there's so many broken rares in draft sometimes, you just lose because like the rest of the game didn't matter. So I kind of want a low rarity cube so that the games are kind of interesting, right? And then, yeah, obviously you still have some very, very strong cards when you don't include rares or mythics, right? It's from every printing. So stuff like Mother Runes is in the cube, right? Which is like a very broken card that is probably not an uncommon power level. But I think for the environment, it's fine. It's just kind of like a little limiting factor. There's a lot of cross archetypes, which is something more prevalent in the Nyx cube. But I usually like, when I build my cubes, to have very, very loose archetypes so that when players draft it, they can be creative with it, right? I don't like stuff like, oh, white, blue flyers, you know, like that's all you can do. Or, you know, black, red sack or whatever. Like, obviously, those archetypes are in the cube, but you can also do other stuff. Right? Like, you know, like black red control or like just weird stuff. So I like cards that fill multiple purposes and they're very versatile in a lot of different strategies. That's kind of how I kind of curate this list of my comments in the comments, basically.
It sounds like a very, very healthy cube. I feel like I remember that when it was on Magic Online that, I don't know, you wrote somewhere or said somewhere that it was very important for you that there was an answer available in the cube for everything. Is that something that is part of the identity of the cube, or has that just changed over time?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's always going to be a thing, right? You don't want a card to be like, oh, is this the best pick of the cube, period, right? I feel like that, like, I don't even know what I would first pick out of my cube. Like, I can't tell you what the best card in my cube is. I think that's, like, a good way to do it. Some people really like the Hodden strategy in my cube, which is, like, it could be very broken if you have, like, a lot of them, right? But yep. I feel like that every color, I make sure to have ways to deal with disenchant effect. And then every color has, like, graveyard hate, for example. So if you really need that effect, then you can draft in your sideboard or whatever, right? So, yeah, that's kind of, like, a philosophy that's kind of important, is that when you lose to a strategy, is it because you didn't draft cards to kind of combat that, or is your strategy like not fleshed out enough, right?
Yeah. Sure.
So what are the main things that have changed from when it was on MTGO to now?
Okay, the main things is that for the Magic Online version, I think most people were just saying that the blue-white blink deck was too strong. And that can definitely happen in Peasant Cubes. I mean, most Peasant Cubes have like Cloud Blazer, Mold Drifter, Soul Herder, you know, these kind of cards that are very, very oppressive, right?
Yep.
That are like 3-4 ones. And usually in Peasant, it's really hard for aggro to have like a good identity because, you know, all the lands enter tapped, like the dual color lands or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to kill your opponent fast. So after being on Magic Online, I got to say that, well, it's good feedback, right? When people say that, oh, a strategy is really strong. And also they're the players playing it. So even though, even if I don't think so personally, that's just a fact that Blue is too strong in a sense, right? Like you can have one idea, but if your players are telling you a different idea, then it's just a fact that you have to kind of face. And whether you want to change anything around that, it depends on you, right?
Yeah, they will keep doing what they think is right. You can't convince them.
Pretty much. And also it's like, if someone thinks it's too strong, then even if it's not too strong, I would still lean towards depowering it so that people can try other stuff and don't feel like that, oh, I have to draft blue white in this queue because it's the strongest archetype, right? So
that's
like
a good
that's
point.
Important.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the change from there is that I actually added in the shocklands, the rare shocklands into the cube, so the aggro gets a little better, which doesn't really make it a peasant cube anymore. So I put peasant plus instead.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of a little shady, I guess. And then I also threw in the white blue flyers because usually back then white blue was really about just value and blink and stuff like that. So I just added in an extra archetype so that it one depowers the blink archetype a bit, and it also introduces another way to play white blue instead of just like the blink deck, the control, the counter and go deck, right? So there's a different archetype now.
Yeah, something that maybe is funny for you to hear is there was one card in the original list that I think was the weakest card in the cube, and that inspired me to build a cube for myself.
Okay.
Maybe you want to have a guess what that card could be.
Oh my, I have no idea. It's probably some of that those what's it called? The three color cards that I end up
yes.
putting.
Yes.
Yeah?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. It's probably like I don't know, like the 5/4, right? The what's it called?
No, the artifact. The
artifact. The Esper artifact. Yeah. So like, yeah, because that's a very good card. I feel like that's a very, very good card. But
it's
the power level wasn't there.
Very, very slow. It's cool, but like choosing multiple times, always finding the thing you want. It's cool, but. I think it's not. I think it was very, very weak. But
okay.
In the original list, you had like two of each three color pairs or something like that. Two cards.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I felt like it's just not fair. These cards are cool, but they are not good enough. There are so many colors that they should be more powerful than the less colored cards. So I took that to heart and started building my pyramid cube, which the idea was that the gold cards with the most colors. It's also peasant cube have to be the most powerful cards, and you have to go quite low on power level for the single color cards when you start. I didn't start at either road page. I decided
okay,
it was even
okay.
too bad, but with that idea, I got to an interesting place. I think.
Wait, that's such a cool idea. So it's like any rarity, right?
I did it at peasant, which restricted it very hard, but I probably should rebuild it at any rarity.
Oh my god, dude! What if all the gold color cards can be rare and above? You know?
Yeah, I guess that.
Oh my god, that's so cool. Wait, that's such a good idea. I really like that cube idea.
Yeah,
sweet.
Maybe it's time to rebuild it. Yeah.
I don't know if you mentioned that like the two color cards also are like kind of in between. So it's like you have the three color cards which somehow have to be strongest, like what, Rock Swarmonk or whatever, the 3-mana 3/4 lifelink, the Bant one.
Oh yeah. Oh my god, that card is so bad. It wasn't my cube, right? Oh,
I like that card. That's
I like that card too. I played it in what's it called? The Modern Masters 3 format. I picked it pretty highly. I mean, you could just like pick the Rover Horror. It would be better.
Oh
right?
Yes.
Like, what's the point?
That is a kind of insane, yeah.
Something that might be kind of funny about us that might not be true of everyone is like just because a card is like bad or something doesn't mean we don't like it. Like I like Aether Rot Page even if I'm not, you know, picking it out of a lot
of
reborn.
Me too. Like, I love the Jackie cards, and like I like good design cards more than anything. If you would tell me that I could just like change Aether Rot Page to be like, I don't know, to be a bit stronger, then I would put it in, but that's not the case with Magic cards, I guess.
Yeah. There recently was an interesting day before yesterday, there was an interesting thread on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, about what we think is the best designed card in Magic. And okay. I really liked scrolling through the list there and also had my own opinion. Did you see that thread?
I did not see that. That's a cool little topic.
Yeah, do you have a card off the top of your head that you would name there? It's probably not either Rod Page.
Probably not. It probably has to be something very, very simple and kind of like explains the mechanics and stuff like that. So I would just probably pick something like I guess it depends on how complex. So you can always go like Lightning Bolt or like Llanowar Elves or whatever, but...
Yeah, that was often named. Yeah,
it can also be just like a flyer, right? Like a 3-mana 2/3 flyer. I think that's actually like completely fine.
Just the Windrake. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, just like Windrake. Like it actually explains Magic quite well, in my opinion. And then if you want to go to like more intense design-wise... Because, like, best design is kind of weird. It depends on who you're asking and what the context
is,
right?
For sure. Yeah. Like, people's answers were very different.
Yeah, you can say, like, the dual-colored tap lands are good design, right? Because otherwise you have to pay with basics all the time. So, yeah, those would be my guesses off the top of my head.
Yeah, I thought about it for a while, and my answer was Eternal Witness.
Okay.
Because it is a creature. Creatures are very important for Magic, I think. And it's powerful, but it plays at very different power levels. And it's pretty clean.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, so scales with like the environment.
Yeah, exactly. Like it was back in the day, it was like a relatively new card when I started playing Kitchen Table Magic. And it was good then, but nobody ever complained about it. But still, it's in Vintage Cube list still, because the cards it returns, like if you return the Time Walk, it's insanely powerful.
Yeah. I like that.
I think that's really cute. Yeah. Cute.
Okay. Wait, Finite, do you have one?
So it's tough because I don't have a card off the top of my head that I think is like the best designed or whatever, but one card I saw somebody mention in that thread that I really liked the idea of was just Solemn Simulacrum, just like nice value creature. A million years ago, I'm sure like it was very powerful for the time, but it's still aged in a way that I think is like pretty solid. Like I don't think it necessarily deserves a spot in like Vintage Cubes and stuff like that, especially given that I think it was probably there not super long ago. I still think just in terms of what it does, like the role it fills, it's been just a nice kind of like value card for a long time. It hasn't been oppressive. It hasn't been terrible. I think it's just been like in a good place. Actually, possibly a better kind of nomination I saw for this best designed card would maybe be Garrick Wildspeaker, the first Garrick.
Oh, okay.
Imagine like designing like brand new revolutionary card type and just knocking it out of the park with brand new like design template. Everything it does is just right on in terms of rate and power level loyalty. I don't know. I think that's probably a better answer than Solemn, if I had to guess.
Yeah, Garrick actually aged really well, right?
In terms
of the power level. Yeah, it was quite good.
I think if you take the challenge that it put to the people at the time into consideration, then it might be the correct answer. Yeah, designing a completely new card type with rules and balancing it. And then hitting it out of park like that, that's probably...
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. Sounds like Garrick has defeated E-Witness in the...
I don't know. It's less clean, but I still stand by my answer, but I think that's a very good answer.
We have to bring in a panel of judges.
Yeah,
I guess one thing that I should probably mention, too, is that... I also have a peasant cube, and I've also kind of opted for that like peasant plus space that you're in, Amaz, like because of rare mana fixing. Like,
just you have really, really one mind there, because coming back to the presentation, like both of you mentioned, like Max didn't mention it right now, but when explaining the cube, mentioned that not having to lose to rare bombs and still having a good limited experiment, like that's really core to both of your cubes, like your peasant cubes.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of like what makes Magic enjoyable for me. And thinking about what you were saying, Amaz, about like having an answer for everything and that kind of thing, like I just enjoy Magic in general when it's like interactive and when like decks don't fold to a single card and that kind of thing. That was definitely like one of my goals when I was building my peasant cube. Also thinking about aggro specifically, again with the rare lands, if you're drafting like an aggro deck, I find that it can be really hard to like incentivize actually drafting two colors instead of just trying to force some monocolor deck or whatever. If you can't actually cast your spells on time in the two color deck, if all your fixing enters tap, how are you going to be able to curve out and like enact your game plan? That sounds pretty tough.
No, yeah, for sure. I also tell people, the new people to draft my cube, is that there is no monocolor deck. I kind of like just, I couldn't make it work. Yeah. Basically, first of all, I like gold colored cards anyways. So that kind of like plays into what I want it to be. But at the same time, it's like, man, there's so many cool things you could do in this cube that requires not being single color. So I just literally tell people, like, don't draft monocolor. It's not good. But at the same time, it's also not worth it because, you know, you skip out on all these cool lands. Mm. My multicolor section is actually higher than any single color section for cards. You know, just, it's just so much more fun. Oh, do I pick this fixing or do I take the strong card that I know I'm not going to get back, you know? I think it's just more fun when Magic has more colors, in a sense. Not that I don't like monocolor cards. I loved original Eldraine for all the adamant it does. But I feel like that for my cube, I want a little bit more dimension to it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I like gold cards as well. And I think that's, well, maybe in the last episode, it's been a while, but it's definitely, multicolored cards are basically Magic's most beloved drawback because they're harder to cast, but somehow everybody lost them, which is amazing.
Like, Yeah, another point on gold cards really quickly is that I actually don't like gold cards that are too pushed in what they do. If a card is like, oh, you have to do this thing or it doesn't work, like, or like you have to be in this archetype or it doesn't work, like usually I kind of steer more clear towards it, I guess.
So you want them to be more standing by themselves, like
more
monks and...
I guess a good example is Izzoni, the black, green. Card, because it's like you have to draft the graveyard base deck or this card doesn't work kind of thing, right? A card like Baelof Null, for example, right? Like you don't have to draft the graveyard base deck. You can just play the creatures or whatever, but you can still do the graveyard thing. You can mill yourself or whatever, right? So like I think one card is like cooler than the other because of just like the texture of the card.
Yeah, I think that's a good example.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
I do feel a little bit different there, but I do like when they... Like, my peasant cube is... It should be clear what the color combinations do, so it's easier to draft. It makes it a bit more boring to draft, maybe, for very experienced players.
Yeah.
I want it to be very new player or, like, very casual player friendly. You can still do crazy things, I believe, and I really try to have a lot of cards that sit between the archetypes, but the gold cards should be very clear about what you should do.
Yeah, that's interesting because it's like it when you make a cube, it really depends on what audience you're trying to cater towards, right? So yeah, if you want a cube that's like good for all players, then you know the gold signpost cards, they're very, very useful because like you can't just explain the whole... if you're gonna explain the whole cube before you go to draft, you're gonna be most likely sitting down for like a three hour lesson, right? Like in school or whatever before you get to play the game. Like you don't want that. But yeah, like looking at a gold card and knowing what the colors do is like very, very important. But to add to that, one of the most recent gold card sets that I have a lot of fun of was Dominaria Remastered, where, for example, blue red was Storm, but the gold color card was Quicksilver Dagger, right? So
yeah.
I think Magic has gone to a point where the gold cards are just so strong in what they do, in that if you're this two color pairing, you always pick the gold card. Power level is just too strong for that card. So I think signposts are fine, but I also think that if they're too strong, then you actually limit what a drafter can do in terms of like when they're trying to deck build.
That's fair.
Yes, but I don't mind.
I think in Dominaria Remastered specifically, I think that was an example a little bit like your Peasant Cube, where they were just trying to push like multiple themes like for that color pair, because you also had the Horseshoe Crab or whatever and like Hermetic Study.
Yeah, that's right, yep.
And actually, like one of the sweetest things I saw anyone do, I think it was Numot, and I think he had some kind of like High Tide Storm kill where he just made a ton of blue mana and then just untapped Horseshoe Crab with Hermetic Study on it and just killed as a pun.
That's pretty funny, actually. Yeah. I like my cubes where a color combination is not strictly one thing. I like to put two or three. Three is sometimes pretty hard for some color combos because, like, I don't even know if you can have three Arctos with Boros. Like, is that even possible? Yeah. I don't even think so. So, I just like it so that when you are in that specific color after pack one or two or whatever, you don't just be like, oh, well, I'll just pick every Simic card because it's Simic, you know, because I'm in Simic. Like, I think you still want people to kind of like think about what cards they want, even if they have already decided their color combination.
I think that's another thing that Crackshot has spent a lot of time like trying to kind of solve, like the idea that the draft like sort of gets more boring, like once you know what you're already doing, like specifically with the kind of three-step cube. Yeah, do you want to talk
about
it's
that? a different cube. Yeah, they are like, this is a cube I made for people who really want a challenge, where I want the drafts are very interesting until the very end, where there are many different themes in different colors. And the first two packs, you are just presented with commons and uncommons, most of them from relatively new sets that just fit very many different molds. Like, maybe it's blue 1/2 that makes a 1/1 flying Thopter.
That card
would then fit something with Blink, it would fit something with the flying theme, it would fit something with Artifact, and all the payoff, all the Builderon stuff will just be presented to you in the last pack. So you will not know what you are building around. So you have to hedge your bets and have a good overview about what you actually can support once you see the super powerful pack 3, which is basically just build around rares and rare fixing. So also the first two packs are starved of fixing. So in the end, you will have to make a lot of very difficult decisions about how many colors you can play and which are actually the themes that you will support. And yeah, but it's a real headache to draft.
Yeah. So really quickly, so you're saying that you see your packs based on like what number of packs it is and the rarity or something like that?
Yes. Packs is just commons and uncommons that like have a lot of themes that they could go in, but no payoff. Mm-hmm. And the last pack is just powerful rares and rare fixing, like much more powerful cards. But since two packs are weaker, you will have to play some of those cards. Could be then the cards that support the rest.
Dude, I love that. But like, oh man, if I'm doing that in real life, that's gonna take so much time. Oh my god.
Yes.
The packs and everything? Oh my god.
Not really seed. You just have to have basically two different boxes and shovel them.
That makes sense. But then after playing, you have to like, you know, separate them back up again and everything. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. But very cool. It's still very cool. I wish there was an easy way to implement it in real life, I guess.
Yeah. It's a bit more of a headache, it's true.
But yeah. But like, I think, as like a cube designer, whenever we finish drafting and my drafters go like, oh my god, I need to draft this again because they missed something, and I'm like, I'm so happy. Yes. That's like the best. That's the best feeling. It's like, I wish I went into demons in your cube. My second cube, the more powerful one, that's like a demon tribal. And they were like, I don't know if they support it or whatever, but I always say for my second cube, it's like, if you see a card and you think there's a strategy there, it's probably supported. And if it's not, you should tell me after the draft, you know?
Yeah, then it's an accident. Yeah. Exactly. So you said there's a lot of changelings in there. So a lot of different tribal hints. Okay. And
yeah. So I guess going into the second cube, which is the mind map cube, I want to obviously, you know, include some higher rarity stuff and do some more degenerate stuff or whatever, right? Like, I want it to be cooler. But then I also think that there are some cards in Magic which are just so powerful that they kind of just dictate like what the cube environment is. Like, for example, if you put Oko in your cube, that already says a lot, right? That already raises the
pick
level to a certain point. And there are some cards that are just not playable, right? So I went to the cube where it's higher rarity because I really like the build arounds, the draft thing, and everything. So that's kind of how I made this mind map cube. And I think we played on the server once and everybody had a lot of fun. They just want to draft it again. And same thing with my paper guys. It's just like, there's a lot of flavors in each color. So like, some I can't really figure out, like green white is like tokens and counters, right? Like, because that's what all the green white cards do.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Whatever, I'll let it be or whatever. But then things like black red. Oh, black red is like so much fun. There's like reanimation. There's like, you know, the sacrifice stuff. There's play from exile, you know. So I want to basically support everything. I also want to support tribal. So there's like demon synergy with like Liliana's contract. And then suddenly the 1-1 changeling from, what's it called? From Modern Horizons 1 becomes insane, you know? And then I just kind of build on top of that. This cube was very hard to build because I ended up cutting a lot of mechanics because you can't support every single mechanic, right? So like cutting stuff is like really, really difficult because then you have to be like, oh wait, this category of cards are immediately out. So they replace it with something else or whatever. But I think it landed in a very good place where at first it kind of started as a tribal cube. So like just pure tribal. Mm-hmm. But then I found out that like, that's kind of boring, right? Like if you're humans, then you're humans or whatever. You're not going to draft anything else other than humans. So then I added in like, you know, cycling matters, you know, and then, you know, changeling is its own archetype. Just artifacts and enchantments are their own thing. And then, you know, just different things rather than just tribal.
I also noticed that both of your cubes are pretty big. They're both at over 600, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Over 600 cards.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that just accidentally that did that happen? Or is that like a design choice, something you really like?
Okay, so yeah, that's a good question because I got asked by other people that too. No, I do like big cubes in general. Because I want them to have a lot of replayability. Now, obviously, the bigger the cube, there's more challenges, right? The first challenge is that it gets very complex, right? In the amount of cards you need to read. So to kind of combat that, I kind of make it so that, it also helps the second point, is that a lot of cards kind of do the same thing, but they're just slight variations of one another. I guess the easiest example would be like, Giver of Runes and Mother of Runes, right? But I only have one. But that, you know, there's a lot of cards that are the same. I guess Raphine's Informant and Seasoned Hollowblade would be, like, just looking at my list, would be kind of same because they both can put big creatures in your graveyard for reanimation, in a sense, right? So they kind of are the same card, but they're different enough such that multiple replays of the cube will be interesting, I guess. And then my second point was that if you have too big a cube, then it's really hard to draft a cohesive deck. But if you have cards that kind of do the same thing, but they're like slightly different, I think that's completely.
Yeah.
Thinking about what you had said about kind of starting with like a tribal kind of idea for the mind map cube and then transitioning from there, but also like the idea of making sure like there are multiple supported archetypes like in your color pairs in the peasant cube, it kind of makes me think like, that you have like a kind of rule for your audience, like, you know, even if that person is like you or people in your playgroup a lot of the time, you know, I don't like when the picks are decided for me. Like, I don't like when I'm in the human deck and there's a pack and there's one human in it. And it's like, well, now I'm not even making a choice. Like,
yeah, it's kind of like that. And also I'm not I always say this, like, okay, so there's some newer draft players that come into the group every now and then, right? And then they always want to get better limited. And then I sometimes like I coach them or whatever. And the number one biggest thing is that they have bad habits. For example, it sounds kind of silly, right? But like, so one of my guys will always scry a land to the bottom, like no matter what. Like, I mean, then I was like asking, it's like, why would you do that? It's like, well, I just want spells in like the mid game and late game, right? So why would I want lands, right? Like autopilot, right? So then I was like, well, if you put a land here, then you can like double spell here. And that's like really strong, right? Or you can play your five drop or whatever. And then his mind was blown, which was kind of, it sounds kind of silly, right? To be like, well, you know, obviously you shouldn't part of a line where you can double spell. But when you're so used to something, you can develop a habit and you can just kind of like autopilot. So I want people to kind of like expand your mind and all that shit. So that kind of made the cube. Like, kind of like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess, like, kind of something I was following up on, just thinking about, like, the way you've designed your cubes, the sheer number of cards in the cubes compared to, you know, like, Jakob's Peasant Cube or mine, where, like, I feel like they're pretty concrete kind of instructions for, like, this color pair does this, or very signposty, kind of typical for limited, whereas yours is, like, more of a, I don't know, less of like a limited experience and more of like a cube experience, I guess. Just, it kind of seemed to me like simplicity, replayability are sort of opposed. Maybe not diametrically, but even just thinking about chaos. Chaos, in my opinion, is like extremely replayable.
Yeah.
Part of that is because, yeah, like there's not a ton of simplicity. Like there's such a deep card pool. You're never going to get two decks that are exactly the same or even necessarily very similar. thinking about, you know, your cubes being like almost 700 cards, there's got to be a lot of replayability there, not to mention like all the archetypes doing different things within the same color pairs and that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah. I just basically tend to like big cubes more anyways. If I'm going to invest in these cards, I want to play with it more, right? So yeah, that's pretty much it. And it might be kind of overwhelming, I guess, when I want to make changes, because like there's so many dials to move around, right? But at the same time, I feel like I'm pretty good at it. I don't mind like removing a card just outright. Just like, oh, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm not like super married to a card or anything. I just want the environment to be as fun as possible. So I think a lot of people tend to up their cube count more because they want to play with all these cool cards. And then they don't know what to remove. So they just go like, whatever. I'll just put a bigger size, right? Kind of like what commander players do, I guess. Whatever. I'll just remove some lands. I'll play some more of these cool cards or whatever, right? So that kind of context. So I think it's important to just like not be too married to your cards or like a specific archetype or whatever.
Yeah. Like for me, I don't really have a problem with finding cards. But what I very, very, very often do is replace something in a similar slot. So if it's a creature, similar mana curve slot or like a removal for a removal or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm a bit lazy there, like not rethinking the whole thing when just the save swap most of the time.
Yeah, if you have a few cards that you want to add in, that's fine. But then also, like I said before, it might become like a bad habit, right? Where it's like, oh, this is always going to be that mana curve or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Yeah.
I think there I have to be really careful to not have develop a very bad habit. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and then that kind of thing becomes tough too, right? Because like if you are suddenly rethinking every swap you're making or thinking about every swap in the context of the entire cube, I don't know, that sounds like kind of paralyzing to me. How are you going to make a decision if everything is like such a drawn out thought process? I mean, Amaz, it sounds like you manage. So that's that's
really
impressive.
Oh my god, I spent so much time on this one. I still need to clean it up a bit. You know, I think the green section is it's not clean enough. So yeah, I'll do that soon. Yeah, definitely do it soon.
Sounds like cleaning up the house.
Get to it eventually, yeah. But yeah, another thing too, just going back to that idea of replayability, not everyone on the Magic Online client is, you know, like an expert or whatever, but just thinking about when a cube is there, a lot of the time there will be at least some people who grind it. Certainly some people who, if not most people who play it, who draft it multiple times. I guess most people probably, it's just the once, not sure. Mm-hmm. It does seem like replayability is like super important and potentially lack of simplicity could even be a desirable part of the experience for a cube on Magic Online. So,
oh yeah, I don't think mine would hold up as a Magic Online cube at all, like my peasant cube. Mm-hmm. Others maybe, sure, but definitely not the peasant cube. It's not for that.
That's how I feel about mine too, but anyway.
Yeah, I feel like that on Magic Online, it's more enfranchised players, right? If it was on Magic Arena, I think it'll be better, right? Because like all sorts of players.
That could be, yeah.
It's interesting, yeah. Oh, and another thing too, speaking of, you know, not knowing how many drafts like the average person does or whatever, do they share data with you? Like for instance, when people were complaining about blue-white in the peasant cube, did you actually get to see like some kind of stats about which cards or archetypes were most successful or anything?
Yeah, so they actually do that for most cube designers, right? Oh my god, mine just happened to be on a rough one because they had some admin thing going on so that my article wasn't even published on the main site. There was like a whole thing. Mm-hmm. So mine was just like the exception. It was like just kind of weirded out. So I didn't get any of the stats or anything like that, but you know, yeah, that was just unfortunate for mine. I think it's like a timing issue.
That's too bad.
We have to go without the win rate of either Rod Page.
Oh yeah. Oh my god, dude! I remember someone playing against me. I was so happy, and then I beat them. I'm like, oh no! All right, I'll remove it in the next update. God damn it, man!
Oh no!
Oh jeez, yeah. I'm actually gonna remove the charms in the next version. The three color charms.
Oh.
The new ones, I guess, the Cabaretti, Riveteers, or whatever that, and also the Cons charms, Martyr Charm, Team Shot, whatever. I think they're just not strong enough. They're needlessly complicated, and like they're always last picks. So like, why are they in the cube? You know? So I'm gonna remove those in the next update.
I mean, they're in there because three color cards are sweet, right? Which is sort of how the pyramid cube exists. For
the
correction.
Three color cards are sweet. Yep. But the cards themselves are not. So they just need to get on designing a set with better three color cards. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I recently did some flashback drafts of the Alara block. And like people were talking about, oh, I would first pick this charm or whatever. And I'm just like, take a panorama. I know it's not like great fixing or anything, but like, I just want to cast my spells. Oh, so man.
Panoramas. How far we've gone, right?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. So talking about Cube this much, I have to ask. So you already mentioned going to Vegas, right? For the 100K or whatever coming up in Limited.
Oh yeah.
Are you going to CubeCon by chance in October?
I actually know nothing about CubeCon. Where is this? And I'm assuming you just like play a lot of cubes, and that sounds like a great time.
Yeah, so I can talk about it a little bit. It's in Wisconsin. I think this is the second one. So last year I didn't go to that one, and I was like, man, that looks really sweet. And of course Jakob is very far away, so he had a similar thought, but unfortunately, you know, wasn't really able to do anything different this year. But this year I'll be able to go, which is exciting. I think it's October 19th through the 22nd. And it's like a somewhat competitive event where, yeah, like a bunch of people have submitted their cubes, like a ton of people submitted cubes to in the main event. And then like roughly a quarter of cubes that were submitted actually got put through to the main event. There was a lot of polling and stuff to decide on them. And then, yeah, you pretty much just try to do your best in the main event over first 2 or 3 days or whatever. And then I think there's like top 64 and then like top 8 or something like that.
That's
kind of
crazy.
Day.
So like, do you guys like draft different cubes when you're in the main event or something?
Yeah. So I think you more or less get to choose what you're drafting. I'm not sure exactly how it works because I haven't done it yet. But yeah, I think you do have some agency. So like, I know a lot of people really like vintage cube and that kind of thing, like cubes that kind of approximate like constructed or at least like super high power level. For me, I'm a sucker for for the weaker stuff, any peasant cubes, any, you know, limited cards or otherwise like not super strong cards.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll probably be jamming any of that stuff.
Okay. There's some really wild cubes in there, like really wild designs, like some that are all gold and like barely have enough fixing that will really play out really interestingly.
Okay, very, very cool. I like that.
Sadly, I can't go, but I don't know, maybe next year, but it's a really long way away. But I was lucky enough to play in a cube tournament in Germany a month ago. It was a 24-player cube tournament where we played 3 cube drafts and then cut to top 8. So I played 3 different cubes and luckily managed to make top 8. So I was also able to draft Vintage Cube in the top 8 and had a very good time. It was really, really cool.
Okay, very cool, very cool. Nice.
Yeah, but it's also crazy how much work it is to organize something like that and how long everything takes to like prepare and then shuffle the cubes again and distribute them again.
Yeah, I would think so. But then also,
yeah,
I guess Fina doesn't have to worry about that. He's just there to play.
Yeah,
for sure. As sweet as it is that like there are these cube events running every now and then, just pops into my head like, oh, like what if I could organize like a big like chaos thing like this? Some of the bigger, well, the one quote unquote like big chaos thing that I tried to organize once in the server was like a 16 person event where if you went 2-1 or better in draft number 1, then you go to draft number 2, which is sort of the top 8 draft, and then it was sweet, but it was also really hard to wrangle 16 people. So I can only imagine like, like I think CubeCon is sold out and there are like 400 tickets or something. So that's obviously like a much bigger scale. Yeah, it seemed like, you know, if nothing else, like even if you're not going, it at least seemed like CubeCon like might be of interest to you for like future years, thinking about how you have multiple cubes you've designed. And it sounds like you've played in like a decent number of in paper tournaments, which, you know, I actually haven't. I have like very little experience with paper tournaments. So,
all right, well, I have to bring some Chaos Draft paper tournaments, right? And then you'll be right on it.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Do you know anything about the Cartographia cube, Amaz?
No, but is it one of the ones that are coming up or something?
Yeah. It is. Yeah. Yeah. So it's part of that Spotlight cube series, which your cube was also part of. Mm-hmm. I think for a while they actually got rid of the cube Spotlight series, which was really sad. But now with Cartographia coming back, it actually like implies that, you know, they could be bringing the series back on the whole, which would be awesome. Suddenly, you know, like Yeah, like I was already talking about how it seems like your cubes are really suited to being on Magic Online, and like, hey, maybe there's a chance for a second run. I don't know. But yeah, with Cartographia specifically, Jakob and I got the special honor of being invited to playtest a cube, and
oh yeah, I couldn't do it.
Yeah, that part was a bummer.
Oh, okay.
Just because like time zone considerations didn't work out in his favor. Okay. But
yeah, two people working daytime jobs on different continents is just
a recipe
for our schedules not working out.
Right.
I just wanted to mention that. Credit again to John Terrell for including us. And it was just such an awesome opportunity to play test that. As someone who's like played a lot of Magic Online over the years, feeling like I'm part of the client or like getting to make choices that actually like affect things. I don't know. I think that's like a really awesome feeling. And also I think, you know, for the most part, there are a lot of great changes that were made to this Cartographia cube because of the playtesting. So I'll be excited for that to go up. And I'm not sure when this... I don't know when this episode that we're recording now will come out, but I believe that'll be something to look forward to.
Nice. Yeah, I'll check it out. Yeah.
Awesome. Can't wait to play that. Hope to not face any of you in the cube. In the cube.
Oh, man.
So it's funny you say that, actually, Crackshot, because I was thinking, like, going back to what Amaz had said toward the beginning about people, like, not wanting to play the RCQ because, like, he and his friends are there or whatever. Like, I feel like for me, like, that would be more of an incentive to go, like, not because I'm trying to win the thing or whatever, because, like, you know, if my goal were to win, I would probably not choose to play against Amaz. but just, like, the idea of, you know, like, the challenge and, like, trying to see, like, okay, like, if I play my best, you know, draft the best deck I can or whatever, like, you know, how am I going to be able to do if I, like, pit myself against
these? You got to play with better people to get better, right? And also...
Yeah, I mean, I do on the server. Yeah. But in the random queue, I prefer an easy game
but
most
like,
of the time.
I don't know. Also, yeah, to make good habits, you need to also get people to have good habits, you know? Just like, you know, just keep each other honest and responsible. Yeah. Be responsible with it, that kind of thing, yeah. So like our group, whenever like we see someone do a very, very bad play, dude, I'm sorry. You can feel sad about losing the match or whatever. We're going to have to point it out to each other, right? Because at that moment, it's what you're going to remember. You know, attack first and then play your spells. Like something very as simple as that is like, you need to be ingrained to your mind. You know, you got to remind each other that that's always the case, you know?
Yeah.
That's the point.
Yeah. I really like that mindset, like the ability to, you know, actually like chat about what's going on. I feel like it's so rare in Magic and it's kind of sad. How often are people able to like constructively like give each other feedback about like stuff they could have done differently? I don't know.
Yeah, and also when I guess I'm going off a tangent, but when I watch streamers and sometimes they make a misplay and they end up not mattering, they say they like word it out. They say that, oh, it didn't matter anyways. And then, dude, I can't take it. I cannot. Oh my God, I'm so mad. It always matters. Yeah, it doesn't matter this one, but like, dude, you're gonna, if you don't have the consequence of doing a mistake, it's not gonna matter. And then you're not gonna remember for next time, and it's just gonna be, it's just spiral out of control. So yeah, the thing. I'm like,
I mean, that's something that's very common on your stream, that you and your chat, it's like always an event when you make a mistake. And everybody shouting in chat at you.
My chat goes on me when I make a mistake, you know?
Yeah.
It's just that, okay, it's interesting because I mainly stream Slay Aspire, right? Dude, Slay Aspire has so many different plays. There's so many mistakes you can do. I'm still not running out of them. But in general, I play Slay Aspire more like for, because like, I play really fast. I like fast gameplay, right? In Slay Aspire, because it's more like an adventure game for me. So that's fine. But when I play Magic, oh my God, I would not do the same mistake twice. Oh my God, I would just like get, you can just punish me however you want. Like no food for a week or something. I would just be so unhappy if I do the same mistake twice or like misread the same card wrong twice. It just cannot happen for me. Like I'm very hard on myself for Magic.
Yeah, people should really come check it out. Like recently you were in the evenings always, or my evenings. Streaming some Magic. And it's really fun. You're just a great entertainer.
Thank you so much. But I actually said on stream.
That's a good time.
Yeah, because when Wilds of Eldraine released, I'm like, okay, this set is insane. This set is so much fun. It's actually too complicated, I think, as a set, even for like me. So I can't imagine for like normal people, right? Like I've been making mistakes left and right. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to stream until I get Mythic 1. Like, I feel like this is the set to do it. Like, I don't, didn't really like the other sets that came out recently, I guess. Like, the Lord of the Rings was not really too much of my vibe or my, every card tempts the ring. I get it, you know, like. But like this set, I'm like, wow, there's so many different interactions and stuff like that, and there's so many off-color stuff you can do. So yeah, I like the set. So I set a goal for myself. I could probably do it, right? I don't know. Mythic one should be fairly doable, you know. So that's what I'm trying to do now. So I'm basically playing Magic after Slay Spire for this month.
Yeah, there's one thing I noticed. You didn't like Vampiric Rites. Have you come around on that card?
Oh my god, Vampiric Rites is unplayable, don't you think? Dude, that card is not
I like
good.
It. I like
okay,
it.
Why do you like it? Okay, so first of all, you have to pay 3 mana to sacrifice a creature and draw a card, gain life.
I feel like it already does something when it just sits there. And I rarely have a 1 mana play.
No, you can't. You don't have that much mana. Basically, in my opinion, is that cards that are expensive are always bad. Like, they scale really, really harshly, right? As in, like, a 2 mana removal spell is... Torch's Tower is insane, right? And then 2 mana removal is like pretty damn good, like Candy Grapple. And then when you get to 3, like Curse of the Werefox, people kind of like don't like even then. And then I can't even believe like 4 and 5. So like, I think mana costs are like the main thing when it comes to limited. It really comes down to cost. And Vampiric Rites is just the most expensive of that effect, right? Whereas like the 1 mana one is the Sellsword, and also the 0 mana one's Rune Bombardment or whatever.
The Goblin Bombardment is insane.
So, like, you can
yes,
see how insane it gets. Like, dude, Vampiric Rites is like, you pay 3 to draw one, gain one, sack one, and then 5 mana is 2, right? Like, gain 2, draw 2, sack 2.
Yeah,
dude, that is just not good. That is like an unplayable card.
I played with it and I liked it. Okay. So, I don't know. Maybe it was because the deck where it was in was just so good at making reds and also had Bitter Blossom.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. But even then, I'm like, I tend to really stay away from the card. Unless, like, I can see it as, like, a sideboard option for, like, maybe your opponent has a lot of adventure destruction, like the -2/-2 giant, or, like, the fairy, the blue-white fairy that destroys a tap creature. Like, that's okay. You can make them fizzle out or whatever. But then, oh, man, I just like good cards more, man.
I really like that card. I don't know. I always liked it in the format where it was in. And in the one
fine. That's okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Just always wanted to draw it when I had it in my deck and didn't draw it. And I don't know. It felt good to me.
Okay.
So because you said it's unplayable garbage and I liked it, I thought.
Oh, that's the beauty of limited too, right? Like you can actually, different people can move different cards and have different ratings of cards and it can all be right? So that's why we play limited. It's like it really, just... That's actually awesome, like that fact.
Yeah, I also agree that it probably was also the context of the deck where it was good in. And I have only had it in that one deck. I've seen it go very late and not take it because, like, you have to have a very specific setup for it to work.
But still, I mean...
It's just a card I love.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work, but I love
it. Okay.
So maybe a bit like the Oversold Cemetery. Like,
I'll give it another try, I'll give it another try. I thought that Hatching Plants was unplayable garbage, just so bad. And then I tested it a bit, and I was like, yeah, it's okay. Still pretty garbage, but it's playable at least, you know? So I do tend to try cards that people say are good, you know, just to double check.
Yeah, it could be that it's not really there in the format. It's true. It's a very fast format.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so... 2 mana do nothing, you're dead. Like, are we playing the same format?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was thinking when I was hearing you two talk about Vampiric Rites as someone who hasn't actually played the format, but I've watched like a good amount of it. Yeah, just, I don't know. To me, it seems like one of those cards where, well, when you play it, you're down a card, right? You played it and you have a card in play and it's not affecting the board. Like, you don't get any value out of it until minimally you like hold up mana, right? And you actually get value, quote unquote, when you're starting to use it. And it's not to say that like, sucks or whatever, but if I had to guess, it does seem like it would be probably on the slower side for 2023 limited, especially in like whereas maybe even something like Dockside Chef, at least you get like a 1/2 right to start, and then like over time you're
now they talk about Dockside Chef was insane, right? But then I don't like Vampiric Rites. That's so crazy, actually, when you frame it like that.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, I think.
All right, well, finally, you got to play this set. This set is amazing. Like, it's actually so good. If you can get through the complexity hurdle, I think this is one of the best sets, the best standard sets that you made.
You are just not allowed to be sad that the blue-white tap deck doesn't.
That deck is so bad. Oh my god.
It's just so sad that because it was such a cool idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea. But the fact that, so the blue-white archetype, Finite, if you don't know, is that you tap your quota creatures and you get effect, right?
Yeah.
The problem is that if you choose a tap creature already, it doesn't work.
Yeah, and they're tapped all the time anyway.
Exactly, because you want to attack it. That's stupid. That's, what is happening here, you know?
Yeah, it seems like an interesting idea, but it just, I don't know, didn't quite get there. I wonder, like, how much playtesting happened with that archetype. They maybe not test it, or was it something worse and then they changed it to that last
second? I'm pretty sure it's a last minute change. That usually happens with like weird archetypes or weird cards, like what's that uncommon plus one minus one skull clamp? Oh my god.
Oh yeah.
It's usually like a last minute kind of weird stuff.
Yeah.
That's a pretty epic one though. It's I think it's hard to have a worse kind of last minute change than skull clamp. Mm-hmm. Going back to like what you were saying about being hard on yourself and Magic misplays and stuff, I feel like I have done that for so long, and no, I'm doing this with much success, but I'm at least like slowly trying to like give myself more grace with like misplays, because I feel like it's just more enjoyable if it's like, oh yeah, like I screwed up or whatever, but ultimately I am a person.
No, I mean, yeah, but you can also not do it that many misplays.
Yeah,
it's like
the only thing that I have to say is very important is that you have to take your lesson, but you also have to move on and get back to your focus.
Oh, no,
quickly.
That's very important. Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah, and it's because you're not a machine. It's not always easy to do that, to find a way between allowing it to affect you so you learn, but also allowing yourself to move on to still win the game.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. So I always say this too. It's like if you make a mistake during a match, you have to have the right amount of mental to be like, just forget about it. This is now the new board state, right? Or this is now this is what's happening now. You have to just kind of move on and just like think about it after the match. So that's something that you have to train up to. Yeah, it's definitely a mental hurdle for sure.
Yeah. I like that a lot. Just, I don't know. I keep kind of like sort of exploring like the idea of coaching or like what it would be like for me to coach people. Mm-hmm. And like something that it seems like would be really important is just taking a second after the match to like pause and reflect, especially if the coaching is happening on Magic Online or something where there's like a chess clock. There's only so much time
to talk about.
No, I like that. And thinking about what you were saying earlier too, Amaz, about how you watch some streamers and they are just like, oh, I made a mistake and it didn't matter, and they just brush it off. I think it's kind of going back to what Crackshot just said. I think it can be easy to err on one side or the other of, oh, either I made this mistake and it literally doesn't matter at all, or I made this mistake and it's the only thing I'm going to think about for the next hour. Like,
yeah, this has to be a happy medium somewhere, for sure.
Yeah,
I'm falling too much on the too quickly moving on side of things, and I think Max falls too heavily on the other side.
Okay. Very interesting.
I think enough time like just creating content and that kind of thing is like burned it into my brain of, oh, I don't want people watching the stream or my YouTube videos or whatever to be like, oh my god, like, you know, you screwed up so many times, even though no one actually cares, but in my head people could care, so then I care.
I see.
I think I'm gradually getting better at just like accepting, you know, not only just like making mistakes but also like bad finishes. Like just the other day I like did terribly in Matt's cube, which was really funny. So
all right,
anything else to talk about today? We've already been going a while.
Yeah
all good. We killed it. I think talked about so much stuff.
Thank you very much for your time.
No problem.
It was a pleasure.
It was awesome to have you on, and as always, looking forward to drafting again with you soon, in or out of the server.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, maybe playing your cubes on Magic Online again if the dice land the right way.
I haven't talked to them in a long time, you know, but yeah, you'll find me in Eldrin queues all day all night. Pretty much.
Awesome. I will watch your stream also if you keep streaming Magic.
Yeah.
That was sweet to watch all today. All right,
then I guess it's time to wish everybody happy cubing and hope we will record again not in as long of a
hiatus.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening, and yeah, hope to see you in the Discord soon if you want to join. Of course, it's always open invitation, and yeah, we'll talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.